This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hello and welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast. I'm your host, Harold Thornborough, joined by...
the other host, Rachel Jameson.
Yeah, we've never figured out a good way to do that.
No, it always feels weird and awkward.
It does. It always feels weird. We just got done doing our members pre-show for, I don't know, we was on there for a little while. That was kind of fun. I get to talk about all the things we're doing around our homesteads and personal things and recommendations and just all the stuff going on. And we both got quite a bit going on right now. So that was kind of fun to talk about with our members. So folks, if you ever want to get a little bit more of us and you want to hear that little extra, join either Patreon or our membership, and you can download that and listen to that. So we do appreciate those folks who are our members. Today we're going to talk about getting started with seed starting. Catchy title,
yeah,
right?
It's about that time of year.
Yeah, I've already got some things going. You already have a few things going. It's not too late, though, by any means, to get a lot of stuff going. There's a couple things that like it really early, like onions, which is one of those things that you have to get started pretty early.
You can bypass that if you didn't get them in. You can buy...
yeah, it's not even a big deal. Or you can just have them come in a little bit later. They can just... yep. You can pick them later. It's not a big deal. Or not as big. You can pick them when they're a little smaller. It's just... yep. You know, smaller onion. Still plenty of time for tomato, depending on where you're at. I mean, we're not even close maybe on tomatoes and peppers and things like that. But we'll talk a little bit more about the things that maybe you'll consider. But there's still a lot of time to get the stuff together, get your setup going, and start some seeds. So I thought today we would talk about that setup, what you might need. I wouldn't even say all these things are needs. I did it a long time without these things.
Yeah, I started without these too. Though. Yeah.
I mean, my old way of doing it was setting some trays on the kitchen table next to the window.
Yeah.
I mean, I did that for a long time. I'd get 4, 5, or 6 trays lined up on our large kitchen table right next. We have 3 windows in our kitchen, on south facing windows. And I just set those trays right along the kitchen table, right beside those windows. And you know what? That worked for a long time. I couldn't do a lot, but it certainly did the job, you know, and I was able to get things started. And then when I got a greenhouse, I would get them started there. And on warm days, I'd move it back and forth from the greenhouse to there to get a little bit more sun. And I mean, it was just a lot more moving and doing, but once I actually put together a seed starting shelving system, it's a lot better. It's a lot easier when everything's in its place. So
it is a lot easier. I don't have very good windows on my south side of my house. The only good window I have, which I've used in the past, was west facing. Which is why I ended up starting to buy stuff. It just made it easier.
And I've done some seed starting shelves. I actually made some improvements to mine this year based on some of the things you were doing that's working out almost too well. I'll talk about that when we get to it. but yeah, that's, you know, just things have been working out. I find one of the most expensive, or it can be one of the most expensive things on how you do it, things to get started, is good shelving. Shelving can be really expensive if you want some of those really nice shelves.
It's not good. I will tell you that. This little mini greenhouse that I have put a link in is the Walmart brand, Walmart way of getting started. It's the thrifty way, but the shelves certainly are not the most sturdy, but they work, and that's what I've used for several years.
I was looking at that. You put the link in the show notes, which folks, you'll be able to find those in the show notes if you want to see all these things we're going to talk about. There's a lot of links in the show notes today. So go and check out the links if you want to see what these things look like or what they are exactly, or if you want to buy them. I was looking at those little shelving system greenhouses that you have there, and I was looking at the dimensions. Now, can you put the trays, the 10 by 20 trays, like 2 of them together long ways, like in that way, or they stick out a little bit, don't they?
They do. And so how I do it, I can do it. But if you put so there's a plastic that comes with them, like it zips shut. Mm-hmm. If I used that, I don't think I would be able to zip it. But because I'm not using that, I'm able to do it. Because what
the shelves themselves hold them. Okay.
Because what I'm doing is I'm putting the emergency blankets around it.
The shelves that I'm using I can't do that. I'm using those plastic shells. You see them a lot for sale. I mean, I think I bought mine at Real King. I've seen them at Walmart. They're pretty heavy duty. They're plastic, but they're really heavy. Like you, I don't know how many. They'll hold a few hundred pounds of weight total on these things, but they're plastic. They're a heavy plastic though. And they have like the bars that kind of pop in, then you pop the next shelf on and you can build them as tall as you want. And I'm using a couple sets of those right now. The problem with those is when you put the trays in long ways, they actually stick out a couple inches each way. They're not very deep. They're not as deep as the ones that you have.
Okay. Well, these
they're sturdier, I think, though.
I can put two trays on each shelf in the long way. But my biggest complaint about these shelves is what's nice about them is they come apart. What's bad about them is they come apart. So you can, if you don't have a lot of space and you don't want to leave them up year round, you can take them apart, which is what I do, and put them away back in the box. But when you have things on them, you have to be careful how you slide them around or they're going to kind of come apart on you. And there's like this wire shelving. What I have done with those is I take wire every year and secure the shelves.
So they can't come off.
They can't come off. But
yeah, it's a good idea.
It's a really thrifty way to do it. Ideally, what I would like to do is buy like those wire, you see the wire racks on Amazon that have wheels.
Yeah.
To me, I feel like that would be a great shelving.
I have some of those kind of shelves. I have the 2 foot versions. They're not the 4 foot. They have like the ones that are 4 foot long that you can put like two side by side long ways seed trays. Those are awesome. They're also really expensive. We're talking a couple $100 for like a 4-tier shelf. But they are, I mean, that's something you could use for decades.
Exactly.
And very nice. I have some of those in the 2 foot version that I have in my aquaponics system in my greenhouse. And they're a lot cheaper, of course, because they're only 2 foot. And they work really well. And they're pretty solid. And they come apart pretty nice. I mean, the way they go together and come apart, they're really solid. But then you can also adjust the shelf heights and all that stuff the same way. I also would like to buy some of those at some point and do something a little more permanent on my setup.
I would too.
But it is expensive. Like I said, they're a couple $100 with the rollers and stuff that you're talking about. I seen that. And there's a little over $200 for like a 4-tier shelf on that. And
yeah, so I mean,
that could add up pretty fast. Yeah, it's an investment that I haven't made yet either. So,
and of course, like everything, when I bought these mini greenhouses, they were like $25. And now
they're like 40 something now, I think.
Yeah, I mean, but that's how everything's been over the last few years. It's gone up. So what I do with mine is I have I have two of them that I put next to each other. Mm-hmm. I don't use the plastic that came with the greenhouse part. And then I put my 4 foot lights up.
Yeah.
Over the two of them, because they're only 2 feet wide, basically. So I have to have the two of them next to each other and make the 4 foot.
Oh, okay. So I see what you're talking about now. You just run through the whole thing.
I run it through the whole thing. So if you bought just one of these, you would probably want to buy the 2 foot.
Right. Yeah. I have 2 foot grow lights because I've always set my shelves up on the 2 foot shelves. So I always buy the 2 foot grow lights.
And yeah, I would like to get some 2 foot pink ones. Right now I have the white lights.
Yeah, we can talk about that when we get the lights here in a few minutes.
But that's what I have is the little mini. And then I bought, did I put the link? Yes, I did put the blankets. So what I bought, they're these thin blankets that you put in like an emergency bag in your car. I bought 10 of them and I tape them around it and it helps reflect the light back in and it gives it a little bit of heat because my basement can get pretty cold. So I have those blankets.
Oh yeah. I put a link to those two, the ones I bought down in the heat section.
My shelf setup is those little greenhouses with the, I don't know if they're Mylar, but they're the emergency blankets.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about those when we get down to the heat section and as far as holding the heat in and the light, also light and heat. We'll talk a little bit more about those because I want to tell you about that's the setup that I got from you that I changed my mind that is working extremely well. And like it actually worked so well, I had to like make some adjustments because it was like too good on the heat side.
I didn't put any of my heat mats on. I have a couple of lemon trees.
I have heat mats on timers and it got too hot in there.
Oh dear. Yeah. I have, just with the lights and the blankets, I have a couple of lemon trees in mine right now and it's quite warm in there. Yeah. I grew lemons from lemon. I bought lemons. for water. And I thought, oh, let's, I mean, come on. That's what all of us, a lot of, I had to experiment and guess
growing
what?
Lemons.
I have lemon trees now.
That's awesome. I love it. I love it. Let's move on to containers. I mean, everybody's going to figure out their shelving situation and it's just what you can afford. Do the best you can with what you can afford. If you've got a place where you can build something permanently, maybe getting some pallet wood and ballots. And I mean, if you wanted to build, go into it, I mean, you could make it as cheap as you want. And if you had a place, you could do that, but you know, just do what the best you can for shelving. Cause
if all
probably,
you have is a window.
The potential is that that's some of the most expensive stuff you're going to deal with, even more so than, I mean, even LED grow lights have gotten more affordable than shelving.
Oh, they're so, shelving has gotten really expensive.
Yeah, it's really raised up in price.
Have gotten better and better. And
they keep getting cheaper. Shelves keep getting more expensive. I don't know. Crazy. But the next thing you're going to have is some containers of some sort to put your seeds in, right? I mean, generally, and traditionally, you'd use the 10 by 20 trays, okay, that have the different cells. You can get all the different size cells. Now, in the past, I've always did like, I start off really small and then I have to do a lot of up potting. I'd use the 72s.
That's what I did too.
But now I've actually went with the I'm starting with, if it's something that I'm not going to have to up pot that's going to be kind of small, I've been using the 50. Because they're about double the a little bit bigger than the 72s. So I don't feel like I have to, some of the stuff I don't have to up pot. Like if I'm growing like my brassicas and stuff, getting them started, they're only in there for like say 3 or so weeks. Yeah. They don't get that big. So they're fine in the 50 cell trays.
And
I just leave
and
I
don't have to up pot.
Yeah, and I don't have to up pot. The downside is you don't get as many seeds started in an area, right?
Right. Yes.
So but if you up pot, you still got to keep them under the grow lights. They're still going to take up more space then. So it's like you might as well just go with something a little bit bigger. They actually have bigger ones if that's even too small for you. But the 50 is the smallest I like to go with anymore as far as the cell trays, the 10, 20 cell trays. Now, what you'll want to do, though, is get the trays that those sit down in that don't have the holes.
Right.
To keep water, because it's best to bottom water. We'll talk about watering here a little more detail, but you'll need those trays to keep your water in, to water your cells.
Tell you right now, spending a little bit of extra money on the heavier duty ones.
I put a link in for the Bootstrap Farmer on Amazon.
Yeah, those ones are really heavy.
They're really heavy duty, but now they're an investment also.
They are an investment.
They will last you multiple years. Versus the cheap ones, they'll last you one, maybe two.
Man, those super cheap ones are horrible.
Yeah. One year is probably the best you're going to get out of them.
I started buying the little bit more expensive one. Not that I want the Bootstrap ones, but I started buying the little bit more expensive ones, which I put a link for. It's still way better than the cheap, flimsy.
I will say, shop around though. Now, I've traditionally bought some from Bootstrap Farmer, but there are some other companies making the heavy duty ones now. I'm thinking that, you know, the guy that, what's his name? Eric with I think his name's Eric with Epic Gardening. Can't remember his name now. Anyway, I believe that guy bought a company and they're doing the heavy duty ones now.
Oh, cool.
Selling through Epic Gardening. And I think there's another company I ran across here a while back when I was looking for some seed trays that's doing some heavy duty ones. And it might have even been cheaper than Bootstrap Farmer. I don't know. Just shop around. I put a link for the Bootstrap Farmer ones because it's what I have and they are solid. I mean, those things are heavy duty. I mean, they're
I know somebody that has, I actually was able to put my hands on some, and they are definitely nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
I don't think you'll have to really buy them. I mean, every 10 years, maybe even longer that those would last.
Something a lot of people are going to that I haven't actually used are the silicone ones also.
I've seen those. You can
push them out easier. I guess they last quite a bit longer.
Yeah, I was wondering.
So those might be
an
option.
I've
not used them, but they're also an investment. They're a little more expensive, but I haven't used those before. So I'm not going to say yay or nay for sure on those. Now, something I've been running across a lot lately is the Red Solo Cup. I've always used Red Solo Cups.
I was just going to say, you're talking about something. But I've always used
doubling them
too.
Up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, that's something I've been seeing a lot of people on YouTube talk about is doubling them up and putting one inside the other, using the bottom one for bottom watering, the top one. You put holes in the one you plant in, and then you don't put holes in the one for water, obviously, and you set that one down in there. That way you can still bottom water your Red Solo Cups, right? Well, I even came across another video, and I'm like, duh, this makes a lot of sense. For your watering one, use the clear ones. That way you can always watch your water level. And I thought, that's genius. Use clear that ones on the genius. On the outside one. And then you always know when you need to add water. So it's something I didn't even, none of the others were even talking about. And I come across this video and I went,
that's really,
well, that's just like common sense. Why wouldn't I have thought of that?
Yeah, but
that's
like
really
that.
Smart. So put a red Solo cup with some holes in it down into a clear plastic cup without holes in it. Use it to water. And you got your, that way you're still bottom watering and it'll hold more water and you have to water as often.
And we may have talked about this. I think we did last time, but the Solo cups, I hate to bash any other brand, but when we say Solo cups, I know it's a brand. They are definitely sturdier than buying. I tried 1 year to go with the little bit cheaper generic ones. They fell apart in 1 year, where the Solo cups, you can actually use them. I have some, I think, that are 3 or 4 years old.
And folks, be frugal when you're going to your kids' birthday parties, your friends' birthday parties, whatever, grab them things, snatch it up at the New Year's parties, the Christmas parties. Hey, say, hey, just rinse them out and use them. I mean, and make use of them. And you may not have to buy any at all, you know?
Right. There you go.
And save some money. It ain't like they're, I mean, if you just wash them out, they're fine.
It's great recycling.
Yeah. And use them up and use them till they start cracking and you can't use them no more. That's what I do.
I use those a lot because then I don't, especially like tomatoes. I love them for tomatoes because I don't have to up pot.
Yes. That's the best. Tomatoes and peppers. They're perfect for that.
And you put them in those. And then I put those in the 10-20 tray just to kind of keep it organized on my shelf. Cause the shelf is wire and the cups tip over. So that's what I use them for. But I've also seen where people have built their own wood ones, which works really well where you're growing things is on a floor that you don't have to worry about getting dirty or wet, or even in a greenhouse. It probably wouldn't work so well if you're doing it in your kitchen.
I think they would work really good for soil blocks too.
I use
the homemade ones.
I want to make some homemade ones because I do when I have time, I really like growing in soil blocks. It's actually my favorite way to do it, but it definitely is more time consuming.
Yeah.
But my vegetables just seem so much healthier when I do it.
Yeah.
So I put links in here.
I don't do the soil blocks, but I think they are a great way to go.
Yeah. I put links in here for the soil block maker company that I have. There's a set that you can buy, which it's a little bit cheaper, but it's not cheap. Soil block makers are expensive. But then I put a link just for the solo. I tend to make the, what are they? Probably the 2x2 square ones. Those seem to be the one I make the most of.
Yeah, and they got the ones. They got the really small ones you can make, and then basically you'll take that and set it inside of the bigger one.
When they have like a dimple maker, and and then so it has the little tiny ones you can set inside the 2x2, and then you can get the bigger one that you can set the 2x2 in. I do have that bigger one, and I really like it. But like I said, this is time consuming, and I use when I make this, which is linked below. I usually like to use Elliot Coleman's soil block maker mix.
Okay.
His recipe, which I linked below.
For soil.
We'll talk about in the soil. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk about it in a second.
But you also linked to the Bootstrap Farmer.
Yeah. You put a link in for a YouTube video on how to build your own seed starting trays. So that.
Yeah. That's like the wood ones with the three sides, which work really well for soil blocks.
Okay. Awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people. I mean, if you're against plastics and you don't want to bring all that stuff, that's awesome. I mean, ultimately, it is the ideal way to do it.
Well, the other thing is there's like almost nothing to store.
I also think it's a little bit messier. And if you're doing a lot of your stuff in your house, nowhere it can be a lot messier. If you got like
oils
getting loose and going everywhere. And it can be a little messier for sure. And there's a trick to getting that soil just right moisture.
There is.
Everything just to learn how to really get that stuff to hold together good while you plant in them.
It's like a chocolate cake mix. It's like
There's a system. You get good at it, I think. But I mean, I've been around enough people doing it. I've even done it I was at a friend's house one day and I was like, let me try that, you know, and I've actually don't have them, but I think they're a great way to go.
I really enjoy it. I know a farmer that does thousands of them every year because he does market growing.
Ultimately, it can be a lot cheaper too than buying a lot of seed trays.
You know, if you're so he actually sells his like that. He sells the soil blocks. And once the plant, so the soil blocks are kind of fragile until the plant gets bigger and then the roots hold it together. And so he sells them like that. And for him, that's a huge income boost to not have to buy pots to sell in. He just hands them a plant with the soil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about soil now. Let's talk about the actual soil. Can be an expense if you're buying some nice seed starting soil. Now, there's a difference between potting soil, seed starting soil, topsoil, compost. All these things are different. What makes, I'll let you just go ahead and say, what makes seed starting soil, say, different than potting soil? Do you know?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
For me, I don't actually, I'm really bad about soil stuff.
It's
for
me, sterile. It's
the, that's true. It's sterile.
Yeah.
The other thing for me is it holds water, I feel like, way better. So there's usually something like coco core. Usually, actually anymore, it's coco core. Very few people use peat anymore. But it's usually got coco core in it. It's usually has like vermiculite or perlite in it. So, sterile
is probably the main thing that it is a better for moisture absorption and all things. I generally make my own. I have this permaculture mindset.
Do you sterilize yours?
Well, I have this permaculture mindset, you know. So, in the early days, it was always like, you know, seeds fall in the ground, you plant them in the ground, they grow. You don't need no special soil. I can just take the soil out of my garden and I can use it to seed start. And you can absolutely do that. But you're not just bringing soil into your house. You're bringing pathogens, right. And you're potentially bringing insects. Say hi to all the little bugs that I just brought in. Didn't even know aphids are the worst. If you get aphids like doing that, and it can happen, there is a fix for that. And I did this for years, and I would just deal with the issues after I got them in the house. The fix is you can throw it in the oven and you can sterilize it.
That's a lot of throwing it in the oven if you're doing a lot, though.
You can. And I don't do it all the time. I'm just saying, if you don't want to deal with the issues, you can take about a 4-inch thick, spare about 4 inches thick in a pan, throw it in for just, 20 minutes at about 180, and all problems go away. And you got a good soil there, and you can use it. But now I don't do that usually because I'm building my own soil because I'm using a little bit of garden soil, of my potting soil that I make, and I'm using leaf mold for the water retention.
Right.
And so,
you're using compost and leaf mold. Are you adding anything else? Is that what you're linking?
I don't use compost. I actually just use like a more of a topsoil with mixed about 50-50 leaf mold is actually what I'll use. Cause actually you don't want too much with tomatoes and peppers. You can get away with it, but with some things you don't want too much nutrients in that, in your seed starting soil. A seed actually has all the nutrients it needs to sprout and grow and germinate and go. So you don't want too much. It's okay to have a little in there, but you don't want it overloaded. So I don't use compost, but I do use leaf mold and I use some topsoil, and I'll just kind of mix that about 50-50 and I use it and it works. Does it work as good as what you're going to go buy probably not. I probably get a lower germination rate and probably doesn't even grow quite as good early on as it might in a completely sterile seed starting mix. But I feel like the price difference is worth it because I don't have to buy anything.
That's what I'm hoping to get to. I'm not making any of my own compost or soil yet. And I really want to up that game a lot once we.
And generally what I'll do even is, and I'll do this with things that are going to be going a little bit longer, like tomatoes and peppers. I don't generally bother adding anything to anything that's only going to be in there, say 2 or 3 weeks. If I just see started at maybe three, if I'm starting at like 6-8 weeks early, I feel like I need to feed it a little bit after a while.
Yeah. So a lot of peppers need that.
Yeah. So what I generally do, especially with peppers and tomatoes, is I will do my mix. And then about after they germinate and are up about 2 weeks in, I add some worm castings to the top is really all I do.
Oh, interesting.
And I just kind of water it in. And kind of feed it. I'll usually put maybe like a 1/2 inch probably of worm castings on each one. And it seems to do fine. until it's time to transplant, and I don't do anything else.
Hmm.
But that's me. And then some people actually buy mixes.
Well,
and
that's really similar to how David the Good, I put a video in.
I seen you had a link in there.
Actually, it's a whole article, but he's got a couple of videos within the article of his, and he actually does it a lot like you're doing it.
Does he? Okay. I didn't watch the video, but yeah, I'd like to. Yeah,
and then, of course, I also put a link for Elliot Coleman, which Elliot Coleman is like the market gardener grow guy. His has obviously got amendments in it, like green sand and, you know, he's definitely using things where he's, I wouldn't call Elliot a permaculturist. He's mm-hmm. a fantastic gardener.
But yeah.
He's not trying to close loops like we're trying to close loops.
Right. I think that I think leaf mold to me replaces vermiculite or peat moss even.
Do you get your leaf mold from your own property then?
I do. Yeah. And that's why I started using it, because I've been making my own leaf mold. So it's been, you know, it's like, again, closing loops, using what's on my property to bring in more stuff. And I think that vermiculite does a little bit better. I actually think that peat moss probably does a little bit better than leaf mold, but I also like the fact that leaf mold doesn't cost me anything. Now, I will, and I think you do this too, use vermiculite on top of your trays to keep them from getting like mold or anything like on top of the, or mildew on
some
top
of them. And some of it too, it is for, especially on my onions. It gives just a little bit of weight for the onion.
Yeah, you can also do the same with the sorghum peat. You can do that, and that'll kind of prevent it too, because basically it just helps keep the tops dry where they're not, you know, getting moist and you know, inviting some of that crud on there. Because a lot of times you'll get that green mold, and I've had that happen. I've transplanted them in the garden. I've not had a lot of issues. It can kill your plant if you let it get out of control, but if you kind of keep it in control, it's not too bad. But generally, it's from top watering, you'll get a lot of that.
One of my mentors, Craig Schaff, the one that I said that makes thousands of soil blocks, his almost are always coated in that green, and he never has issues. But he always bottom waters, always.
Yeah. But if they're soaking it up to the top, it still does it.
Of course, this is what he does every day. He doesn't have a job. This is his job. And he hand waters everything. He doesn't have anything on sprinklers because he wants to see what's happening, not just put it on sprinklers. So, you know, I think you can do that.
I guess I mentioned all that just to say, I do try to keep most of my stuff on the property, but I do buy some vermiculite and I do buy some sorghum peat for little things like that, because I feel like it makes a big difference. And I can just add a little bit of that. And I don't think leaf mold does near as good at preventing that from happening. It kind of just absorbs and becomes part of the soil. Right. So I feel like adding a little bit, I use peat, you use the vermiculite for that, just to sprinkle on the top of the soil to keep that dried out a little bit better.
You like peat over coco coir?
I think it works better. I think coco coir is more environmentally friendly though.
Yeah, I know. I just wondered. Yeah.
Sometimes I think there's people,
it's getting harder and harder to find.
Yeah. The sorghum peat, I think, works the best for, which is actually more environmentally friendly than the other kind of peat. So if you can get that and use that on top, you don't need a big giant block of it. You could get a smaller block of it. And
a little bit of that stuff goes a long way.
And honestly, if you want to use that instead of leaf, if you don't have leaf mold, use some sorghum, use your peat moss in your mix. If you're making your own and you just need to say you got some topsoil and you can mix that. I've mixed that 50-50 with peat, and it actually ain't bad. It makes a pretty nice seed starter, I think. I've bought a lot of seed starter mix too. Don't get me wrong. It just gets expensive. You know, if you're starting a lot of seeds, it can get pretty expensive.
It is. And as when I was starting here, and even now when I get busy, I do buy seeds. I will buy seed starter soil. Because when I started here, all we had was sand. And I had nothing. And so, unfortunately, when you're in that position, you have to bring things in.
Oh, yeah. Early on.
I could use my topsoil in leaf mold easily, but I don't have any leaf mold because I don't really have anywhere for compost.
I usually set up a couple fence rings every year.
Right.
And fill them. It's funny, though. You'll fill them like humped up full way up above. Like you got like a 4-foot piece of fence in a circle. And mm-hmm. I'll fill it up with leaves, and I'll have it humped up, you know, 2 feet above the fence, 6 foot tall pile. And in about 3 weeks, you got about half that. And about 3 weeks later, you got about half that. And then it ends up being about a foot to 2 foot of actual leaf mold in the bottom from a 6 foot tall pile of leaves. It's kind of funny.
My problem is most of my yard is sloped. So I have a hard time finding anywhere to put anything like that.
Yeah. I'll just set it up
and
anywhere.
I got a
big old ring set out here right by the kids' swing set. I mean, just made a big ring and started putting all my leaves in it, you know, and then it's only about a foot tall now, and it was humped up, you know, it's like 5-6 feet tall at one point. So it's breaking down really good.
See, now that's, I need to learn from you. I need to do more of that because.
What I'm using this year is last year's leaf mold that I made. And I just put it in a tote and lock it down and put it in the barn and save it for seed starting mm-hmm. next year. And I'll make some really good, you know, break it down and make sure it's real good and crumbly. And then I'll just fill a tote up with it.
I really have no excuses now with 20 acres of trees.
Yeah, you got plenty of leaves for sure.
Yeah, I got no excuse. I mean, some of that's pine, but there's a lot of leaves there.
Yeah.
I got no excuses now.
But I would say if you're
not growing leaf mold night next year, you should yell at me.
If you want extra success, if you want, you know, even if you just want to increase your success levels to the max and you're fairly new to it and you don't have all the stuff, go buy, you know, you put a good recommendation in here for the coast of Maine.
I like their stuff because it's clean. You do have to worry about like some of the soil and compost that you're getting now causing problems, but they have it's a clean product and it does have leaf mold in it.
And in the end, if you go down to your Walmart or your TSC and you buy a seed starting mix, it's fine. You're going to use it to get your seeds going. It's fine. Use it. I say get your seeds going. Reason you're seed starting is to save money, though. I mean, ultimately, I mean, because here's the truth. If it wasn't so expensive to just go buy plants, the amount of plants that I'm buying, I'd probably just go buy plants to save myself all the seed starting headaches, right?
Exactly.
Because it is a lot of work, but it saves you so much money because seeds are so much cheaper than plants. I mean,
well, and the other reason to grow from seed is if you want a specific variety, because sometimes when you go down to your store, you can't find
there's a bunch of reasons to do it. I mean, the heirloom and grow, you know, this food security and always having the plants. There's a hundred reasons to do it, but honestly, it is a lot of work. And if you didn't have the time and it was work and you can afford it, buying plants is actually way easier. No doubt about it. I mean, I've done it a couple times when I got really running late and I was behind on things. I just went down and bought a lot of plants and punched them in the ground and had great garden, you know, but
I did it last year because last year we had a late frost. Actually, we had a late freeze and it killed some of my peppers. So I went and bought peppers.
2 years ago, I did it big time because that's when I put or was it 3 years ago? I put the big garden out here in front of my barn that wasn't ever there before. And I rototilled it. Of course, I'd already seed started. And I was already just running late because I waited till spring and then I rototilled. And it was already a little bit going in like a month later than what it probably should have been going in anyway. So I just went and bought a bunch of plants and I put that garden in and I got it going. I did start some things from seeds. I mean, the leafy greens and things all were seeds still. Mm-hmm. They did fine. But like tomatoes, peppers, all the stuff I would have started from seed, it was all bought. I had a great garden.
But like everything, like you said, it's gone up. I mean, even this last year, everything has gotten so much more expensive. I remember last year when I bought a couple of peppers, being floored at how expensive they were in comparison to what they were 3 or 4 years ago.
Yep. You will spend hundreds of dollars stocking a garden up with baby plants, and it will cost you tens of dollars done right to grow that many plants in a seed starting setup. So, you know, it's a better deal, you know.
For sure.
Let's move on to watering. You got automatic waterers, Rachel?
I do.
How's that working out for you?
They work pretty good. The one thing I do not like about automatic waterers is they water automatically, whether they need it or not.
Yeah.
Now, it is nice if you want to go away for a week. Up here, what happens is it's about time to start seeds. And it's also about that time of year where everybody from the north is really tired of snow and decides they want to leave for a week. So my seedlings all get started. And then I end up, how are they going to get watered for the week we're gone or the week and a half we're gone? So I bought this system. It works. It's not ideal. I still think you probably need to be hand watering, especially seedlings, because they can get, they're so temperamental if they get too much water or not enough water. But it works. It works pretty well. I use a 5-gallon bucket, and it's got like little drips that you can put into I put them into the 5 or the 10-20 trays. And it works. And I have that and the lights on timers.
Well, I just use a watering can because I'm boring and I don't ever go anywhere. I just stay home all the time. I never leave for more than a day. So I'm able to water my stuff whenever it needs it. But bottom watering is very important. We mentioned earlier about having the cell tray sitting down in other trays. So, and I just go about the middle, pull out on a little bit, and I got a really small watering can with a really small spout on it. And I just pull it out and I cram it down in between the seed tray, and I fill it up about halfway.
Yeah, I do the same thing
on the cells. I have to go about halfway up. I can see where it's at. Go about halfway up, and that's where I water it to. And I wait till it's completely gone before I water it again.
I'm really liking this idea though of those clear bottom cups. I'm thinking that because you're like guessing, and you're kind of in there going,
with the seed, with the solo cups.
I like that.
It's like, how would not even think of that before, you know?
Yeah, I like that a lot. That's genius.
Yeah. We'll get into it here in a second, but this is where I ran into a little bit of trouble using your method with the Mylar thermal blankets around my thing and the heat mats in combination.
They got a little too warm, huh?
Water went away a little quicker than I thought it would.
Oh.
It evaporated the water so fast that I thought I had like a couple days before I was going to have to water again.
And you didn't?
And I killed 2 trays of onions.
Oh, no.
Because it dried them out so fast.
Oh, wow.
So now I actually have one of those blankets lifted up. Anyway, we'll get into the heat stuff here in a minute. But anyway, watering is, keep an eye on your watering because, won't survive without water very long. So
no, not these little baby seedlings are so dependent on you. Think of them as a child or an infant. They're just really dependent upon you.
and even more so now, this to me is even a less delicate stage than the hardening off stage.
Yeah.
That is the scariest stage for me of seed starting. And we'll get into that here in a little bit, but when we talk about that, I'll tell you my fears in that. I mean, you gotta be so on top of your game when it comes to hardening off, because you can lose stuff pretty fast. But anyway, let's move on to lights. You and I both have Barina lights. You have the white lights.
I do.
I have the pink ones. I actually like the white ones. You said you wanted
I like the white ones because you don't have that pink glow.
Yeah, I have a constant pink glow in this room that I'm growing.
Yeah, and I mean, and I bought them because I have a friend that's a horticulturist, and he told me the white ones will be fine for what you're doing because I'm just starting seeds and putting them outside. Now, from what I've read, and I could be wrong, the pink definitely is better if you're doing like aquaponics or growing inside. Yeah,
and that's what I bought them for originally.
It goes to like the fruiting, the flowering. Yeah. And I'm not doing that yet, but I would... I actually am tossing around the idea of growing some aquaponics and stuff inside.
Well, like I said, that was the reason I had read that or heard that from someone too. And it's the reason I bought the pink ones years ago, because I was doing aquaponics and, I'm doing aquaponics and I wanted to indoors and I wanted to be able to grow stuff all the way to harvest, but that pink glow is kind of annoying in a room. I mean, the entire room is just pink.
Well, you drive by people's houses and you're like, oh, they're growing something.
Yeah, it is a pretty weird pink glow coming from that room all the time. But anyway, though, I like the white ones, though. They're both, I think, similar price. I was looking at the link you put in for yours. I put in a link for the pink ones. They look completely different. Like yours is a 1 bulb, long walk bulb. I've got the 2-foot. Does yours come with like the metal slides that go in the sides to help keep the light pointing down?
Yes.
It didn't look like it had that in the picture, so that's why I was asking.
Okay. Yeah, it does. Mine are, they are a little bit different. And like I said, I have the 4-foot ones and I would like some 2-foot ones.
Yeah.
But they're super.
Mine are the 2-foot.
They are so light. It's crazy.
Yeah, I love how they all hook together and you got one plug, one outlet you got to plug in. They're so light. I've been using them for years. I don't know how many years I've had them, but I've had them for years.
I think I've had mine for
and they're still going.
4.
I think I'm about 5 maybe.
Yeah. And I don't notice a difference in my electric bill, and they run several hours a day.
I need some more because I want to put up another shelf. So I need to order some more, but I think I'm going to order the white ones that you have. The link you have is for the 4-foot white ones, right?
I think so. I don't want
to. Okay, I'll probably order. I'll find some. I'll find some 2 foot white ones.
I want to get. Like I said, I want to try. I might get some pink. 2 foot ones.
Yeah, they're working.
Grow all winter. Well. I like the idea because I started growing. I started growing some things all winter long inside, like lettuce and stuff. But I still don't think I would need the pink for that. It's more for fruits and flowers.
Yeah, I've used.
Like if I was going to do tomatoes, I would need the pink.
Yeah, I've grown lettuce just under fluorescent lighting, just fine.
Yeah. So.
Well, that, I mean, there's a lot of brands out there for LED lights. I mean, I don't know that there's a big difference in a lot of them. I just find good deals, read a few reviews.
Those are just the ones I have so I can.
Yeah. We put links in for the ones we have and they seem to be doing a great job, but there may be cheaper ones out there that were just as good. And you might want
to find there might be better ones too.
Yeah. There might even be, but they seem to be doing a great job for us. Let's talk about heat. A couple things on heat. One, I've got the heat mats. You have heat mats. I have mine on a timer. I have my lights and my heat mats on a timer for, I think, 12 hours. So I have them on all day and I shut them off at night because I don't want that crazy glow.
Do you put a heat mat under everything though?
I do have them under.
Do everything. You really? See, and I don't
need to, obviously.
I was going to say, I don't put them under like.
I have them in a colder room, though. It's a room that's a lot colder than the rest of our house. That's why I did it.
Like tomatoes and peppers, I definitely put heat under. Definitely have to have like tomatoes and peppers. Some of them, like if I'm starting cabbage or broccoli, I don't worry about it as much.
No, I haven't started any. I'm talking.
I have them. I have them under my heat mats.
I have them under everything that I'm growing right now.
Okay,
I meant that.
Okay,
I don't put them under lettuce. I don't put them under the.
Yeah, because I actually only have. Yeah. I only have 4 heat mats, and so I run out of space on my heat mats. And so I just selectively use the things that like heat. Basically, if it likes heat, it'll probably like a heat mat.
I think they make everything germinate quicker, but they would also not be good for some things after they germinated. So you would definitely want to.
Yeah.
I used to leave them. There was a time when I used to leave them on like the heat mats on like my peppers and tomatoes 24/7. Right.
Okay.
But I quit doing that. And I actually think they do better by not doing that because I think it actually simulates the outdoors a little bit where it gets cooler at night. So I shut them off at night and I let the soil cool, heat it back up during the day. And I think they actually respond better to that.
That's really
than having it on all the time. So,
I think as much as we can mimic what's going to happen once we're outside, the better they are.
Yeah, I think they do better. Plus, it's just less heat bill. I mean, less electric bill, right? Because you're shutting them off for 12 hours.
Yeah, because those heat mats probably do. Like the LED lights don't take much, but those heat mats.
Yeah, they take a little bit of power.
Yeah.
So what I do is I run them all on the same amount of timer, and I just run them all for 12 hours on, 12 hours off seems to do really good for me.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it later, but I have a timer.
I have one too. I put in here also. I have one different one than you put in here.
I have a timer, and I love it's connected right to the power strip. And I end up using every single one of those plugins almost.
So. Well, we'll talk about that here in a second. Let's talk about the Mylar thermal blankets that you wrapped on. This was the idea I got from you. Yeah. I wasn't doing this before. I didn't really wrap anything around mine. I just kind of let them hang on the shelves. And you were wrapping, and it does 2 things. They're really like it holds in some heat.
Mm-hmm.
And it
reflects all that light.
Reflects because it's silver. So it or like chromey look and it kind of reflects everything right back in that helps hold the light inside. Works fantastic. Like
it does.
Yeah. It really helps contain that light. Now, why I'm getting this nice pink glow from my room right now is the Mylar actually does a really good job of holding in that pink glow. But I had to raise one of them on the front because it's so stinking hot in there.
Well, you got your heat mats on too.
Yeah, they're on through the day. So I'm going to have to do some adjustment. I just found this out like 3 or 4 days ago.
Maybe so you could open the top so the heat could rise.
Yeah, right now I got some adjusting to do to figure out kind of like optimal. What I might do is put the heat mats maybe just like 6 hours a day and put them on a separate timer. Mm-hmm. Or something. I might just do something different. I got to figure out something different because it's too hot in there for sure.
So how I got this idea was I didn't have enough grow lights. I wanted more, but I didn't want to spend the money on more. So I thought, well, I have all these. I had bought a 10 pack of these emergency blankets to put a couple in each car. And I had a couple extra. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to try putting these around to see if it will help my lack of lights. And then I was like, man, that's really bright in there. That's kind of nice. And the other reason it was because my seedlings are in my canning room and I didn't want the light shining on my jars.
Okay. Yeah.
So that was the reason behind it. And then it just, my plants seemed to work so much better. I seemed to not, sometimes when I was growing under the grow lights, there was always these ones on the edges.
You were leggy.
Light. Yeah. And I feel like this just really helped.
Yeah.
Get light everywhere.
Yeah, it just kind of reflects it right back in there and they just don't get as leggy.
It's like blinding. When you look in that little, it's blinding.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You pull the blanket out and it's like, wow, man, it's really bright in there. Yeah. It does a great job.
It was really affordable to do it. And I've used these over and over and over.
Yeah. A couple bucks a piece. You buy a 10 pack. I don't know, a couple dollars a piece maybe or something.
Yeah.
Something
I just use regular tape.
And I used, they're not real big. So I took three of them to wrap my.
Yeah. Mine took three also. Yeah.
So they're not, cause they're not real big,
Them up and store them in a box till next year.
Yeah. I mean, nothing really. I did tape them. I don't know if that tape will ruin them. I did tape them on. So I don't know if the tape will.
My tape comes right back off.
Okay. I might be able to use box tape. I don't know if it's going to rip them. But anyway,
I didn't use box.
I used box tape, so it might rip them. I don't know.
I just used your regular Scotch.
Okay. Yeah. So it might not hold up for me. I don't know. Anyway, works great. It's a great hack. I'm so glad that I learned that from you because I think it's going to make a big difference.
Just maybe watch the heat.
Yeah, I just got to figure out. I think I could probably just shut the heat mats off and maybe just pick up. But I'm getting ready to plant peppers this next week.
Oh, okay.
I'll probably keep them under the peppers. But honestly, I'll probably just remove them from everything else because I don't think I need them.
And the nice part is that will save you a little bit on your life.
I think with the LEDs don't put off very much heat, but they do put a slight amount of heat.
They put enough.
And I think if you've got them, I think if you've got these Mylar blankets wrapped around, I think it's enough heat. And if I say got my tomatoes on the bottom shelf and the heat mats under that, whatever heat's being produced there will rise up enough.
I should put a thermometer in mine and see what the temperature is.
Yeah, I have it. And I should too, because it got obviously.
I bet you my basement's probably at 60, 58 to 62, somewhere around there. I bet you it's 75 to 80 in there without my heat mats on.
Yeah, it puts some heat off. And with the heat mats
on. You open it up and you can feel the heat coming.
Yeah, it was way too hot. So I got some adjusting to do to it to get it right. But yeah, I think if you get it right, though, it's a great combination and it's going to work really, really well. But
I wonder if your blankets are a little bit thicker. Yours is
thin. No, they're pretty thin. Like I can see through them actually. Almost.
So I can see through mine too.
Yeah, they're really thin. When the light's glaring in there, you can actually barely see through them and see outlines of stuff in there. Yeah. Timers. Let's talk about timers. You've got one. The one you put in here has got it's built into a power strip, you said.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. I actually use the little bit cheaper ones and I just plug the power strip into them. And I kind of like that because I can set stuff on different times where you're going to set everything in the power strip on one time. I can plug a power strip into mine and plug a different power strip into another one. And I can I can have my heat mats set on different or lesser times.
That is kind of nice.
So got those. I got the single ones and they're the kind that you just pop the little clip up on. I have digital ones and they all went bad. I'll never buy them again.
We've had two digital ones fail.
Yep.
And I have the one with the little pop-up thing. We actually used that for, for our watering, for our automatic watering outside.
Yeah.
We used that one for that, but, I might go back to the analog, which is what
I used to use the digital ones on all aquaponics and stuff, and they just kept failing. I had them fail. And these other ones are cheaper, these analog ones, than it's like a timer and it turns and you have to, if they're popped up, they're popped up, they come on. If they're pushed down, it's pushed down, they come on, popped up, they go off. I think that's how it is. And you just
I am becoming a fan of some of the older school technology.
Yeah, it works. This
analog. Yeah.
And I've never had one of those fail. I've been using those for years too. And I've never had one of those fail. So
yeah, maybe I'll buy that. Cause we actually had two of them die last year and they were old. They were a year old. Because we kind of have them on little things everywhere, like for certain things.
Well, I've always used a bunch of them because of aquaponics, because I've always had timers on everything, pumps and
timers make your life so much easier.
Yeah, I love it.
Think you're going to remember to turn the lights off, you're not.
No. And I've been, you know, in the past, I've worked lots of hours. So I wasn't home to do things. So just like it just made things happen, whether I was home or not, which was ideal.
Even if you think you can remember or you do remember, just I feel like the more we can make systems that don't require as much input, the better.
Yeah, I mean, you could ultimately build like this, I guess, ultimate seed starting rack where you could put water delivery on timers. Yeah. You could put your heat mats on timers. You could put, of course, your lights on timers. You could have like this ultimate seed starting station where you just didn't hardly have to touch it, you know, and that would be pretty cool, I guess.
It would be pretty cool.
Didn't want no hands on. You still have to inspect to make sure.
I think you would still have to go in. And
yeah, I'd want to go back. I'd want to look every 2 or 3 days to make sure things going good.
But you could. I mean, if you were a person that was working a lot, but you really wanted to do this and you were okay with investing some money up front, it could make your life really easy. It could make working a full-time job and homesteading doable.
Yeah.
I mean, there's people with automatic chicken doors and, you know, if that's what works for you.
I built a fodder system and I haven't used it this year. I used it the last couple of years, but I haven't brought it in this year. I haven't been feeding the rabbits much fodder this year, which I should have been. I put up a lot of tree hay though for them, so I didn't really need to. But in the past when I was making a lot of sunflower seed, fodder for them.
I've seen your system. It's really,
It works really well. But I actually put a little pump on a timer in the bottom. Cause what you do is you basically pour a gallon of water through the top every morning and let that kind of drain through twice a day. I would do that and, you know, it would water everything and then it would dry out and keep sprouting. And I actually set it on a timer like that where twice a day it would just dump. I'd run for say like 5 minutes and it would be roughly a gallon or so of water and dump through it and wash it out, flood, you know, drain down the bottom and just, I'd have it kick on. I didn't have to go out there. I'd literally just go out there like every couple of days and get a thing of tray of seeds and start another one and grab the old one and swap all the,
I mean, you could,
it was easy. Yeah.
You could do so much that you could do that for your animals. You could do that for yourself with like sprouts or microgreens. Mm-hmm. I mean, automation is, it's nice. I mean, we have technology. We're in the age of technology. There's nothing.
I love being a modern homesteader.
That's, you know, the modern homesteading podcast.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with using technology. There's nothing wrong with not using it. So,
It's fine. I love timers. They're really great. And I also love our next thing we're going to talk about, which is for air movement.
Yes.
Because this is going to make your life a little bit better when you do go to harden off your plants. If you've got some air movement across this plant. Now I'm a little bit concerned because again, I've always had open shelves and I've always used a big box fan just to kind of move across there. Now I've got those Mylar blankets around. What do you do?
Well, at some point after they're sprouted and doing really good, I do end up lifting the sides up.
Okay.
It depends on how warm the basement is and what's going on. Cause my basement is basically it's not a Michigan basement, but it's certainly not insulated. So whatever's going on outside kind of affects what's going on in the basement.
It's less for me. I've got mine in the house in a room. It's maybe 10 degrees cooler than the rest of the house, but it's not bad.
But I definitely, it's so hard to say because it's kind of like when your grandma cooked and she said, how many cups do you put in it? And she said, oh, it's how it feels. That's kind of how I go with what's going on with my plants. But the fan definitely helps. It helps harden them off. It helps them not get moldy.
Your plants will get much stronger.
And it helps them get stronger because they have that. It's just mimicking what's going on outside.
Yeah. What I generally do is, of course, I'll just have to raise everything up, throw the fan on there.
Yep.
And you can do
usually will roll it up.
The day or something. Yeah, and then drop it
during the day or at night. What I did last year was, this is the part that gets labor intensive because none of this is automated, is I would, I don't like the lights on at night for some reason. I just don't. So I turned the lights off at night, but the fan was running. So I would roll up the sides at night, have the fan run, roll them down during the day.
Makes sense.
That's kind of how I did it. But towards the end, I don't worry about the blankets being on as much.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I definitely was married. I mean, I seen where, I kept thinking of different ways. Like, you could buy a bunch of those small clamp on fans and put them inside of it and have one for every shelf. I get a little expensive. Those things like $30 a piece, you know.
Yeah.
And you could have one, for every shelf blowing across that shelf, plus more electricity.
Or you could
I'm not going to do
nothing on the ends. You could just do two sides of your shelf and have it blow down the end of it.
Yeah. Do something like that. Yeah. Anyway, air movement's important. It will do a few things. It actually helps keep your top of your soil dried out too, which can actually keep it, prevents some of that mold and,
I find that not running a fan in, at least in my basement in Michigan, where we can have high humidity in the spring, I just am asking for disease and die off. And
you can run into some problems by not having some good air movement across those plants. So
it I is just important. Use a regular box fan.
Me too. Okay. It works then. That's why I was wondering if you did the same thing
just
I was doing.
Cheap old, whatever box store box fan. Sometimes I usually will set it on a chair just so it's getting all of the levels.
You want to get into this next thing a little bit? You put in this notes because I didn't think to put it in here. Soaking, scarification, stratification.
I forgot my notes upstairs when I did
this. It becomes a big deal if you're especially saving your own seeds.
Yeah. So there's
if you're buying seeds, this stuff's already done to a point where it'll but except for soaking.
There's some seeds that do much better. Now they'll still sprout, but they just do better if you soak them. So for example, pea seeds, you can soak them for a little bit before you put them in the ground, and it just helps them sprout better. There's soaking, scarification, and stratification. So soaking is soaking in water. The scarification is kind of what it sounds like. You're going to take the seed, and usually these are seeds with really hard sides on them. Like, for example, when I started the lemon seeds, I soaked them, and then I took them and put them on some sandpaper and just kind of sanded it a little bit to break down that outside hard shell, and then I started them. So scarification is basically you're scarring the outside of that
hard shell. You can also do that with hot water on some seeds.
Yes. Yeah. And then the stratification, like you said, if you buy seeds, normally they're wet that way. So I just bought sea buckthorn. And I bought it from a guy in Alaska. I have no idea if he stratified them or not. I emailed them. He hasn't answered me back yet. So I stuck them in some damp soil and stuck them in the refrigerator, which is, so the stratification is basically mimicking winter.
Yeah. So many cold
period.
Certain seeds or plants require so many cold days.
Yeah. So certain seeds need that. Other seeds don't. Like your tomato seeds do not need any of that. But with certain things, like sea buckthorn is a cold variety berry. It's like a berry bush type thing.
Yeah.
To mimic outside, they kind of need that cold stratification, which is where you put it in cold. I think what I read was with those, it was 9 weeks or six to 9 weeks. So it just varies depending on the seed. And you don't, like, if you're just buying your seeds from Baker Creek, they've already done all this for you.
What's kind of cool though, it is really a bad thing to keep all your seeds in a refrigerator. Say you had a little, like an old wine fridge or something you had in your garage or another extra refrigerator. If you could, like, say, I've got those three binders, throw them in a refrigerator, it won't hurt any of your seeds. It'll actually help preserve them longer, give you better germination rates if you store your seeds in cold anyway. And it can also, if any need require stratification, kind of kill two birds with one stone that way. So it's not a bad idea for seed storage anyway.
And since we talked about that, at the very bottom, I have this little booklet. I like these little story booklets. It's called Seed Starting Booklet from Story. It's that, you know, the big book that you can get of Story homesteading. They have a bunch of booklets that they put out that are like, I don't know, 15 to 30 pages. In that booklet for $3.95, they have tables of what should be soaked, what should be what you should use stratification on, what you should use scarification on. Mm-hmm. They have just these tables.
And nice.
It's a nice little guide to seed starting. And it's very concise. I really like it. I bought it, I don't even know, 10 or 12 years
ago. And they're cheap, too. The booklets are pretty cheap.
They are, and it's really concise. You don't have to read a whole book to go through it. It gives you just enough information to get you started. And then it has the lists. It even has flowers in there, certain flowers that like those things. So, it's a nice little booklet.
Awesome. Yeah. So which plants are you starting? Which ones do you start inside versus direct sow out in your garden?
For me up here, it's going to be different probably for somebody than if somebody lives in like Tennessee or something like that. But, or even if you lived in Florida, I don't know. If you're in Florida, can you just start tomatoes and peppers outside?
Probably. I would think. I mean, why not?
Here,
kind of growing season. So,
right here, I start tomatoes, peppers, most of my herbs, onion, celery, broccoli, cauliflower. Brussels sprouts, which if you listen to the last podcast, have been an utter failure for me. and melons, I start all those inside early. Now, it depends. Melons and, I didn't put squash on here. Melons and squash, I don't start super early.
Right.
They grow so fast.
Yeah, they grow so fast
that you definitely wouldn't want to. But my tomatoes and peppers, any day, I should probably be making decisions.
Here's what I determine, how I kind of determine what to do. I look at the seed packets, and generally if there's two things, there's a couple things I'm considering. One is days to harvest.
Yes.
And generally if it's like over 85 days, I kind of need to start that inside.
Yeah. I actually have even started, believe it or not, I have started corn inside.
You can, it doesn't transplant as good as some stuff though.
I have not had any issues with
it. A lot of people say it's not a good transplanter. I've never tried transplanting that, but
I do really well that's one of the reasons why I use soil blocks.
Okay. Yeah.
When I use the corn with soil blocks, I don't have issues. Now, if I dig corn in.
Like, you don't want to do carrots. There's root vegetables.
Oh, no.
Carrots don't transplant at all. You know,
but my friend Craig, that does crazy stuff with gardening, he starts just about everything in a soil block. Corn, and he starts wheat. He's growing, he's growing acorn.
The good thing about soil blocks is you don't disturb the roots as much as you would with
exactly. He starts his beets inside early in soil blocks, which I would not do, but he does. So
yeah. So
but I have started corn because some of the corn varieties I wanted to experiment with were really long growth season.
So that's one of the things I do. And of course, tomatoes, peppers, onions, a lot of herbs are that way. A lot of them take a long time a lot of things are like 90, even 100 days. I mean, so you got to start that stuff inside if you live in a halfway mild climate. Now, the second thing I consider is, do I need to harvest this before it gets midsummer? Like I might do something. It's only 60 days to harvest, but it might be something that 60 days, it's going to be 100 degrees out.
So I
need to start that early and actually harvest that before it gets that hot. So I think of that too. And then I do the same thing in the fall. Like I'll start stuff inside when it's really hot and then I'm transplanting it out when it's starting to cool down in the fall. I do that in the fall too. So those are the two things I kind of consider when I'm determining what to start seeds from.
I do start lettuce in cups because I want the second it's not going to freeze, it can go outside. It doesn't need heat.
Yeah.
But it's also the same thing at the other end. It doesn't like heat, but you can start it inside where it's cooler. And once it cools off, you can stick it outside. So
peas inside. Even though they don't take that long, but you know, you got to harvest those before it gets hot. You're not going to have any. I actually do it with some of the brassicas too, because I don't think like broccoli and cauliflower.
Yeah, it does not like
heat. They need an early start, not because they take a long time to fruit, but or to get to where they're ready to harvest, but because you just don't want them out there when it's 100 degrees.
Well, I started starting cilantro because I wasn't getting my cilantro before it was bolting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I started starting my cilantro, even though my cilantro comes up naturally on its own and it's become a weed in my garden. I start some inside so it's actually ready when I want it to be ready.
Yeah. I mean, these are things to consider. And there's so many things I don't start like almost no root vegetables. So they grow so fast.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't do beets or I direct sow them. All my leafy stuff, like kale, unless I'm growing lettuce to eat, I don't grow it indoors. I don't grow it to transplant. I never have. I mean, I usually just grow it and eat it.
I
just plant it direct. And I do it with kale and chard, all that stuff. I just sow direct seed it, and it grows really fast. Squash, I've actually direct sowed that too, and it's
even your winter squashes.
Yeah.
Squash, I usually start a couple weeks early.
Oh, I usually do. I'm just saying I have. And okay. You get them because, I mean, you know, they'll survive right up until late fall just fine. You know, right. So generally.
But when is your last frost?
I can't remember the date. Yeah. Mother's Day is what they kind of say around here. It's like, don't start planting until after Mother's Day is kind of our saying around here.
Ours is usually Memorial Day.
Yeah, so.
We have probably about, 20 to 30 days shorter.
I usually completely abuse that, and I got stuff in the garden like 3 weeks.
I do too, but anymore, it's so confusing. Like right now, winter's back today, but we've had such crazy weather. That's part of the reason why I have some of my season extensions.
And I might direct sow stuff like even a week or so before that, because it's not going to be popping up anyway until then. Yes. So it's not going
to be. I did that last year. And then I do have ways to protect it if we do end up.
I planted like a bunch of nasturtium seeds like 3-4 weeks early outside direct sow, and what they would have been, just because they do so good. And as soon as it started getting warm enough, man, they're growing good, you know, and that worked really well. Everything's different, but you know, there's a lot of things to consider on what to start inside, but one of them is definitely space. Like how much room do I have and how much can I start inside?
That becomes a big issue towards the end of.
Yeah. Everything gets bigger.
When it gets to the point where you're needing to harden off, I don't know about you, but for me, it gets to the point where there is just so many plants that I'm dealing with and I've run out of space and I'm taking things in and out. And
you just mentioned harden off. We've mentioned it a couple times, hardening off. It is the most stressful time for me when it comes to
my garden,
because I have lost some really nice whole trays of things because I messed up, and it just takes more attention. This moment takes more attention than just about anything else. Hardening off is you're slowly trying to adapt your plants to an outside environment. Doesn't sound like that would be too hard, but
it is.
It is, because your plants are not used to hard direct sunlight for several hours. They're not used to the breeze, the outside breeze.
Right.
The differences in fluctuations of temperature. They're not used to these things. And you have to slowly, you know, like take them out for a couple hours, then maybe 3 hours, then 4 hours over a few days, try to increase their time before you transplant them to the garden.
Yeah. It is the time when, you have to be really, you just have to pay attention to detail and not forget that. Unfortunately, this is one thing you really probably can't automate. Maybe there's a way to automate it, but I don't know. I have to haul. I take them in and out every day during this time. I have to protect them too from animals. It feels like the squirrels and stuff.
Yeah.
They're sitting there watching, going, oh, it's that time of year that this lady brings out her trays for us to eat.
Yeah, I've never done it, but it might not even be a bad idea to make like a net house or something to put them in outside, because I mean, you think about insects, start tearing them up at this time. I mean, a lot of things could happen. My biggest issue has always been like, I left stuff out too long.
I've accidentally I've done the same.
And I've let things out overnight accidentally because I wasn't paying attention. Forgot to bring them in. Dead.
That's what I've done. I've done them overnight and then they froze, which is what happened to me last year with peppers.
And I've left them out in the sun too long, too early.
And I fry them. And they dry out so much faster when they're out there. So not paying attention to the watering. So,
Now how I actually had a few years where this wasn't a problem, because I was heating my greenhouse. And for whatever reason, when I start my seeds in my greenhouse, I just open the door through the day and there's enough breeze in there and nothing gets transplant shock. I can just take it directly from the greenhouse to the garden and there's no problem.
So bad.
But when I do it inside, but the difference is I don't have to heat. I mean, I already got my inside heated. It's a lot of money to heat the greenhouse.
Yeah.
Costs a lot. So it's like this, man, which is better, you know? The transplant or the hardening off is such a hassle that sometimes it's almost worth heating the greenhouse for, you know?
It is a lot of work.
Yeah.
I mean, and it depends. I mean, I suppose if you've only got a couple of trays to take in and out, it's not a big deal.
But when you're doing a lot, it's a lot. Yeah.
I usually have, I don't know. I probably usually have 12 to 15 or 16 trays.
Yeah, me too.
Sometimes more. And it's like we're talking an hour every night. And everybody, it's the time of year when my family kind of gets annoyed with me because I ask them to help me.
Come on, let's go get this stuff. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That and when the next thing we're going to talk about is actually the transplanting. And you, especially if you're a little early or if you get a late frost, it's like you're bugging everybody, get some blankets, get some stuff. We got to go ahead and cover everything up. And you're out there and, you know, and if you got some row cover and you've already got your hoops up and stuff and it's convenient and you just got to slid over. That's what I generally do anymore.
Yep.
I go ahead and put the hoops in and I just lay the row. If it's not bad, I just keep the row cover kind of spread out down and I just lay some rocks on it or whatever. Man, and then if I have to run out there, kick the rocks off, drag it over the hoops, throw the rocks on the other side and you're covered.
Row cover is one of the best inventions ever for gardening.
Yeah, it's it'll save you on a light frost. Now, if it's a hard frost, you're in trouble. You're going to get blankets out.
Yep. And I mean, and I would say, you know, if you cannot afford to get lights and all that kind of stuff, that's cool. But I think that row covers, to me, if I had to pick one thing to invest in, it would be the row covers.
I did it for a long time without it, and I lost a lot of plants over the years because of it. Yeah. Or you just stunt things so bad, it's almost like starting over. It takes
I started using mine again to protect my cabbage.
From me
cabbage
too. That's blood. The first thing I bought it for was the cabbage. Yeah.
It's just, they're so nice. And once you great have them.
Bugs and stuff, everything.
Yeah. And once you have them, they last for a long time, pretty much. So they are nice. Because you never know the way the weather has been anymore. I don't know where everybody else is, but where I'm at, we've had basically spring in the middle of January here. And usually our spring does not come till April. And so the weather's just kind of been all over the place. Last year we had a frost in July, which never happens. And so just having these extra measures of protection are nice to have.
Yeah, I'm still blown away by we're reading that book in book club, Ben Falk's book, and they was talking about the year without a summer where they had a
18 something.
They had a killing frost every month of the entire year.
Yeah, and it was year that there was a really huge volcanic eruption.
Yeah, said it on the other side of the planet. Yeah, and they said they got a year with no summer.
It was the year with no summer.
That's crazy to me.
Yeah. And so it's like you kind of, you know, nature is unpredictable. And so that's why I have invested in some shade cloth so I can grow lettuce a little bit longer and why I have row covers.
Yep. It's nice to have these extra things. I've done it for years without it. We're not trying to say anybody has to go have these things.
No, you don't.
You just got to stay on your toes and be ready to drag some sheets or blankets out or something and cover some stuff up. And
yeah, you can just use regular, go down to Goodwill and buy a bunch of sheets and I don't know, somehow hook up some hoops. I've used buckets before if you got a ton of buckets.
Just crammed sticks in the ground, made little teepees over stuff. I've done that. Yeah.
And if it's a light frost, we have ran a sprinkler before. If it was a really light cold snap, it doesn't work great though. But you know, you spend a lot of time growing these seedlings from little babies and hours. To me, it's worth it.
Yeah.
To invest in some sheets or frost blankets.
Because once you get past that, I mean, everything's really just got such a good head start and you're going to have a great garden. If you can just put a little bit of, you got a couple months there of like stressful work where you're just kind of like on toes trying to stay on top of everything and, you know, and just being on top of it. And then, but then it's just, it's going to be so much better because everything's going to be really established. It's going to have a better root system. It's going to look stronger and healthier. Your garden's just going to be a lot better if you can take a few precautions for a couple months.
And if you get kind of decent at this and kind of good at this, you could start selling a few starts to pay for some of your row covers or an extra light. I mean, there is a lot of people out there that don't have the time or the desire to do something like this. And if all you sold was 20 plants to, you know, to help subsidize some of your seed, some of your seed habit.
Yep. There's people looking for folks doing that too. Cause I've seen a lot of people selling them on Facebook Marketplace and stuff. And it's a lot cheaper than Walmart's plants. Mm-hmm. If you went down to Walmart or something to buy them, and you could sell a lot of them real fast, I think.
Well, and people are starting to want like heirloom varieties or, organic. And the other thing nice about buying from somebody that's growing locally is, especially if you're buying an heirloom variety, is you're getting something that's been acclimated to your climate.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Well, a couple of resources. You mentioned the seed starting booklet from Story, and you have a link in the show notes for that. I was going to put this link in, and this is a good little book. If you're a first-time gardener, if you're brand new to gardening, this all seems a little overwhelming. Well, we have lots of podcasts that can help you, of course, but a good book. And I bought this book not because I'm a first-time gardener, but because I just like to support other people writing books and helping in gardeners. But Jessica Sowards, we were talking about her on a podcast, and I couldn't think of her last name a while back, of Roots and Refuge Farm, wrote this book called The First-Time Gardeners Growing Vegetables. And it's a just a, I don't know if you can see it in the camera or not.
Oh, I can now, but, yeah.
It's not super in depth. It's super simple. And it literally is a good book for first time gardeners because it's just really simple. Good. And it's just, like I said, it's nothing that I learned a ton from because it's a lot of stuff I've already done, but she does even have in there like starting seeds, when you should start them, when you should transplant them, and just all the different varieties and what to look for and just different things. Nice. She talks about, you know, just season extensions and, you know, just all kinds of stuff. Good little bit of information for a first-time gardener. The pictures in this thing are amazing.
I might buy that for a gift for a couple of people.
You know, it's for a first-time gardener. I think it's a great book. I really think it's a great little starter book that gives you just enough information to give you a nice garden. And I think books like that are important. I love good in-depth books because, you know, I come next level. But when you're a first-time gardener, that's overwhelming. You know, and a book like that can be just so helpful because it's really simple. It makes it look really simple because you know what, ultimately it is, you put a seed in the ground, water it, and it grows, right? I mean, ultimately, but we're always looking for better results or the best results or things that are just going to be over the, you know, it's kind of that next level.
Yeah.
But ultimately it's all pretty simple. You know, it's designed to be simple.
If you're new to this, there's nothing wrong with going to the star and buying plants.
No, right.
And I would encourage you, if you want to start getting into seed starting, that you maybe just pick one. Like you pick, okay, I want to start my tomatoes this year. And then you buy everything else. Just start small and focus on one thing and learn it and then move on.
That's great.
You don't have to do everything right now. You just don't.
Yeah, that's a good way to do everything. Just take one thing at a time, move on, expand. You don't have a lot of room. You know what? There's years where I didn't grow that. Mostly what I started was tomatoes and peppers. And everything else, I pretty much planted either direct sowed or I bought a few things. And you know what? Those were on my kitchen table by them three windows I talked about earlier. That's how I started everything.
Yeah.
For 3 or 4 years, that's what I did. And because I just did tomatoes and peppers, because it was the only thing I had to have a really big head start on, you know, everything else, I would just buy like onion bulbs, you know, the sets where I could just stick in the ground, get them quick enough. They were fine. I would direct sow those. I mean, potatoes grow pretty fast. You don't really have to do anything with those. You know, so I would just get the things that I knew took the longest and go with that. And I might even buy a few plants. If there were some other things that I want, where I didn't want a lot of them, I just wanted maybe a couple plants, I might go buy those plants. I did that for a long time.
Brussels sprouts this year, because I have not had luck for 3 years in a row.
Yeah,
I might just go buy Brussels sprout plants. I mean,
you might end up with some great, you might end up with some great Brussels sprouts. I know they need to be started by seed pretty early.
Yeah.
Because they got, I think they're over 100 days, aren't they?
They are. And I have started them really, really early, but just not quite early enough. So,
yeah. I read them peanuts are like 100 days too.
They are.
I better get them going.
They're fun though.
I don't think, we talked about that in the member pre-show. We was talking about, I got me some peanut seeds because I'm gonna try peanuts this year for the first time. So I got some learning curve to do on those. I gotta figure out exactly what I'm doing there, but we talked about all that in the pre-show. So again, you want the pre-show,
right?
Join us on Patreon or in the membership. I'd love to have you listening to that. I think that I don't know. It's more just us being us in that member pre-show for sure. Unless probably a lot less information, but a lot more personality probably. So
there's definitely a lot more personality, but I put some information in there.
Yeah, we try to. I mean, we're telling you things we're doing and some recommendations and things too. So join us there if you like. If you want a little bit more of us.
Yeah. And I have a fun interview coming up. Or maybe it'll be posted. But
it's going to be posted before this one. So
folks
in this are going to hear it. So, all right. Well, anything else you want to add before we end this?
I think that's it. We've been going for quite a while.
Yeah. Well, folks, happy homesteading. God bless.
And grow where you're planted.